Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
Saddle up for the best analysis anywhere of the Chiefs' thrilling 33-29 win over the Browns. And this is Unfiltered. Stan Weber joins me to get specific about what was good and bad in the Chiefs' season opener and what it means going forward. This episode is so packed with football, Aaron Rodgers getting benched, the Steelers making the Bills look minor league, and how many times the officials ignored the rules of the sport in week one. It was crazy. We don't stop there. K-State has dealt a major blow as quarterback Skylar Thompson left their game Saturday night with a knee injury. We have the latest. And the Mizzou run defense has breakdown after breakdown in a 7-point loss at Kentucky. The offense is resilient. We're going to discuss what changes this Mizzou defense needs to make. We've got Iowa and Iowa State, Oregon shocking Ohio State, and my favorite college game of the weekend, the Arkansas Razorbacks just unloading on the Texas Longhorns 40-21. Welcome to the SEC. The Raiders are on Monday Night Football, and they'll give the AFC West a chance to start the season 4-0. Did I mention there's a lot of football in this episode? It's all brought to you by Back 9 Development, online at back9development.com. TJ Vilkanskis has a great custom home building company. They'll do a home, a commercial project, or a room addition. He also features the Solheim Condominiums at Grand Mere. Many people got a chance to see those this weekend in Manhattan as they went there for the football game. They're located on the Colbert Hills Golf Course, right near the entrance between holes 1 and 10. Great stuff. If you want to see it online, the entire portfolio is at back9development.com. Bstock.net in Olathe, 14680 South Flaming Road. I watched the Chiefs game, most of the Chiefs game yesterday at a buddy's house. He's got an outdoor TV. It's a 55-inch Samsung that he built an underdeck so it doesn't get wet and all that good stuff. He got it for $299 at Bstock. Beautiful Samsung TV. It's crazy the prices you get there. Don't forget Deal Alley is an area right inside their showroom there where they've got maybe one item left of this, one item left of that, and you save even more. Online at bstock.net or visit them at 14680 South Flaming Road in Olathe. Pro Partners Healthcare, Dr. Troy Burns and his team of physicians would love to provide primary care for you and your family. For one low monthly fee, your whole family is in, and you get direct access to your doctor. You can use this along with your current insurance, and you'll still save money off copays and meds. If you make one trip to the ER because you cut yourself or something, and you're part of Pro Partners, you get it taken care of there instead of that, you're going to save 2 years worth of what it costs to be a member at Pro Partners Healthcare just by not going to the ER. They could save you money. ProPartnersHealthcare.com and Dr. Troy Burns and his team of physicians. Leawood and the Northland, online at ProPartnersHealthcare.com. And Dr. Jeremy Fry, the best orthodontist in Kansas City. 12 area locations for your convenience. The first appointment is always free. Just mention the podcast where your smile is just the start at Fry Ortho. They have free retainers for life and Invisalign for the same price as braces. At Fry Orthodontics, online at fryorthodontics.com. I love football. I think you're going to love this podcast. Stan Weber and myself are both just ridiculous football geeks, and we're about to geek out on KKHI. Hit it!
Sports, politics, life. Buck Roofing presents Kevin Keatsman Has Issues.
Our conversation is with Stan Weber after a great weekend of football and a thrilling 33-29 Kansas City Chiefs win over the Cleveland Browns. That, of course, is where we'll start. It's not where we'll end because we've got college football to talk about as well. Nobody loves football like Stan, although I've had so much fun the last week or so watching football. I think I'm 1B to your 1A, Stan Weber. How are you, sir?
I am doing fantastic, so congratulations. If you're anywhere near as happy about what is going on with football as I am, Kevin, then you're in a stratosphere. This was so cool. I mean, starting with Thursday night and that game where Tampa versus Dallas, the whole nation's watching, the NBC crew, the production is the best. You know, they put so much money into it, got the best announcers with Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth. And then they put on a show where I'm thinking around the country, you either love Tom Brady or you hate him. You either love the Dallas Cowboys or you hate him. I mean, the passion which everyone had in that game, plus just watching the NFL, and then it was poetry. How they fight, they sweat, they try, the energy that they have. It was amazing. And that was just Thursday night. And then it just continued right on to the best game on Sunday, right here in Kansas City, Arrowhead Stadium, packed, and the Chiefs and the Cleveland Browns play a awesome football game. So the NFL, college football, add them together, it just makes the other sports 17 steps behind. And the NFL was awesome yesterday. So, yeah, it was great to see, Kevin. I'm so excited that it's here. And, man, those athletes, those coaches, and those crowds, Arrowhead Stadium packed, so much fun.
I mentioned in my instant reaction postgame after the game on Sunday that if you – and you don't do this, you don't swap quarterbacks. Baker Mayfield's good. Patrick Mahomes is great. That's the real difference between those two football teams. And I think I could watch those two teams play yesterday and say, you know what? The other 52 players, I think the Browns might be better than the Chiefs. I think they might have a more talented roster. And I don't want to just sit here and you know, heap this entire thing on Patrick Mahomes, because he was very gracious in saying that 75-yard touchdown to Tyreek Hill was all Tyreek Hill. And it really was. Hill made an unbelievable adjustment on the ball. Certainly, they know how to play the game with one another and execute a play like that. But that actually was more Tyreek Hill than Patrick Mahomes. So I don't want to, you know, diminish the fact that there are some stars on the Kansas City Chiefs. But I was prepared to say after that game, if the Chiefs didn't come back and win, that the better team won. Did you kind of see it that way most of the day?
Cleveland's good. And I believe in the Browns as the team that is dangerous to the Chiefs. All we've got to do is go to last year's playoff rounds, Kevin, when you and I had a chance to speak about this. I said that the Cleveland Brown game was going to be a tough battle, and I expected the Chiefs to win, but boy, there's some nerves here about what the Browns can do with the 1-2 punch in the running game and other things that they can do. Cleveland's a hard out for the Chiefs, at least, and I think, you know, for the NFL in general, but definitely for the Chiefs. Compare that with the Buffalo Bills, who I don't think match up well with the Chiefs, and the Chiefs have a giant advantage over the Bills. And that's the kind of thing that we saw, you know, going into the game. You want to rewind to what I said about this game publicly, Kevin. I said I thought the Chiefs would win 31-27. I thought Cleveland would be right there. I thought they were going to be very dangerous to the Chiefs. And I also said if Tyrann Mathieu can't play, that doesn't matter, because you got to go with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes and go out and win it on offense. Just go out and win it. Don't rely on your defense to go win the game. And I think a lot of those things came true. It's interesting that we talk about this, because I'm going to stratify your statement. Okay, I don't disagree with you with what I think about Cleveland's roster, and that's without Odell Beckham Jr. on the field. I'm not a big fan of his, but he would add to it, right? I think Landry's much more dangerous and better, and you saw some of that yesterday, that touchdown run. He can throw a pass on that pass he could have thrown, made a good decision, ran the ball. I'm much more of a Jarvis Landry guy, but they have talent. They just did almost everything right yesterday. Did the Cleveland Browns. The game unfolded well for them. They strategized very well. They did all those things and still end up coming up short against the Kansas City Chiefs. It's just amazing how good the Chiefs are. So when we talk about the roster, I have no problem patting Cleveland on the back and agreeing with you, Kevin. And there's definitely a difference with Patrick Mahomes. But I would say this. If you and I went down and listed the 5 best players, okay, not the 20 best players in the game, but the 5 best, I proposed to you that the Chiefs have the 3 best. That, and you and I started saying with this with you how many years ago? 4 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill. Okay? Patrick Mahomes is incredible, but Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill make it an unbelievable lethal. It's like 1 + 1 = 5. And then Travis Kelce is always there in the middle, always able to post up. It's telepathic, you know, an old quarterback. He was a quarterback at Cincinnati before he went to the tight end position. He and Mahomes are on the same page. I would say the 3 best players in the game are those 3 guys. I don't know if you want to pick Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce second. I'll probably go Tyreek Hill, then Travis Kelce. Those are the 3 best. And then you start pouring in Cleveland Browns, and somewhere you put Chris Jones in there, maybe 5th, maybe 8th. But then it goes Cleveland Browns for a long ways, right? A ton of Cleveland Browns fill in after those top 3. And that is just a lethal combination. It doesn't matter who wants to credit the other one. When Patrick Mahomes calculates and he's rolling out and he has an unbelievable ability to understand what's going on and says, I'm going to heave that ball downfield because I see a little hand. He said he saw a little hand raising up, you know, and that he knows Tyreek Hill is going to go fight for the ball, be the guy that pulls it down. And yeah, it was a better play by Tyreek Hill, but Patrick Mahomes had to believe that, you know, we are the two best guys. Let's go. And so it was an amazing game. I mean, how demoralizing is it for the rest of the NFL, or how great are the Kansas City Chiefs that Cleveland basically played three great quarters? And until Juan Thornhill made that big hit on Chubb and knocked the football away, it looked like Cleveland was going to get out of there with a win. They just did everything right strategically and everything else and still end up coming up short.
And that play, the Thornhill play, was just a little bit of a ray of sunshine. There was no guarantee after that turnover. I really thought this thing changed when Hill made the adjustment on the throw, came back, caught it, had the long touchdown catch. Arrowhead just exploded. It just got insane there. Everything changed. And there's been a lot of games in the history of Arrowhead Stadium where the fans have made a difference. I don't ever remember as anything as dramatic as this particular game, where once that touchdown happened and the fans went crazy, that the defense was spurred on by that and the other team just peed down their leg. I mean, that punter fumbling the snap was just, that is all crowd, Stan. That was all crowd and momentum of the game. That is a professional NFL player with a perfect snap right in his hands, just piddling down his leg, which is what he did. And I got to credit the fans for that. And hey, listen, that's part of playing at home. That's part of your defense. It's one of the things the Chiefs didn't have much of last year, nor did anyone have much last year because of COVID. I can't ever remember it being as real as this. I mean, it was just unbelievable what that crowd was.
Absolutely. And I think the best example is to look at Patrick Mahomes. If you could have a camera on him 100% of the time, and just think in the future, he's so young. We may have a time where every player's mic'd up, and at home you can decide, like NASCAR, you know how you listen into the car and hear the driver talk? At some point, we're going to have the technology to be able to hear what the player's saying live. And there's going to be cameras on every player. But if you just did that, that is the best barometer of everything that's going on with the Chiefs. When he does post-game interviews, because he's never been burned and everything's been great in his whole career, Kevin, everyone loves him and he continues to make unbelievable plays, he just tells you the truth. I mean, have you been around a star player who just tells it like it is, what the strategy of the other opponent was, whatever? I point to that because we did get a chance to see with the CBS cameras, after he threw that ball, he got hit pretty hard, and he slid across the ground. His jersey was not perfect. It was kind of off of his shoulder pads. He jumps up, and what did he do, Kevin? He celebrated, but he didn't quit celebrating. He kept looking at the crowd like, bring it on. He wasn't talking to his players. He wasn't talking to the defense like, back me up. You make a play now, we're going to win. No, he went to the crowd and said, ramp it up. Let's go. Let's go. And that is right on to what you're saying. Like, you guys are going to make a difference. You're going to carry us over to a place we had not had last year with COVID. We had to go out and try to win the games on talent. Let's rock this house. And I just thought he kept raising his arms. Remember, he went out of bounds. He slid out of bounds over on the Cleveland Browns sideline. And he ends up still cheering after he's crossed the sideline on the Chiefs side, saying, let's go. And even at the end of the game, when the defense was out there trying to make a stop, they showed Patrick. And what was he doing? Waving his arms like, let's go, crowd. Raise the noise. It definitely was a big factor. The fans deserve a lot of credit for helping the defense, because the defense without Tyrann Mathieu looked like it was Bob Sutton's defense.
Yeah,
okay?
That's what I said in the instant reaction. I'm like, this is the Bob Sutton defense. There's not a playmaker on the field anywhere. You know, it was crazy. But
it was Chris Jones and the other 10 because – I do want to give Chris Jones credit, because I don't know if you noticed this, Kevin, but it was a giant play in this game. When it was all said and done, and after the Chiefs had gained control, they did have to punt the ball back to the Browns, okay?
Yep.
And you know the last play of the game where Sorensen was able to trip up the quarterback and Mayfield threw the ball short and Hughes gets the interception. That's all fine, and those were a big play. But I'm telling you, one of the most untold stories about the biggest play of the game, I thought, was the screen pass by the Browns. Perfectly called, and now you got one of those two big running backs for the Browns out in open field with blockers out in front. That thing might have gone all the way, Kevin. It was a nice, 15 to 20-yard pass play to move him out to midfield. Do you realize, though, that had still more yardage in it? And I'm going to pose to you, I've not seen like an all-22 or something, I'm telling you, there are another 20, 30, or 50 yards left on that play to win the game or change all the momentum. Do you know who made the play? Chris Jones from behind.
Wow.
Chris Jones tackled him from behind. That hustle play, that ability to speed up and catch up and make the play. I don't know if people are remembering that play. I'm telling you, it had 20 to 50 yards more left in it. And I think Cleveland would have had a big chance to win if Chris Jones wouldn't have made that tackle. So he made a few big plays, but that one was the biggest. We were going to talk about the interception, but stopping them at midfield and not letting them get over to the 25-yard line or so with all that time left was a giant play. Chris Jones, the only star defender out there. So Bob Sutton calling and Chris Jones tackling, I guess. No, it's funny. A buddy of mine did exactly what you said. All of a sudden, I look down, I see a text. He goes, Bob Sutton coaching the defense?
No kidding. It was unbelievable. They hadn't punted all day. You're like, they're never going to punt. This is Bob Sutton is back. It's just absolutely crazy. Okay, let's do one more positive here, and then I got a couple of things that I'm going to nitpick on with it. Well, not nitpick, because they could have lost this game, and these are big things that they'll have to shore up. Nick Bolton, the rookie at linebacker, had 7 tackles in this game and looked like he's played in the league a while. The Chiefs haven't been great at drafting and developing linebackers for quite some time. Is this guy going to be a star? I mean, what a first game. 7 tackles in your debut?
He did a nice job. And, you know, the thing about you want to talk about drafting, if Willie Gay ever stays on the field, Kevin, they're going to be good complements to each other. I think he needs someone to play another role. The role he will play, though, is the physicality. He's going to tackle like it's old school. Okay, like we don't see guys who hit people backwards, who are as big and wide as he is and still able to play in the NFL. You can go back and think about some big old linebackers that played, Kevin, but they may not be able to play in today's modern football to be able to run. Bolton has the old school style that he makes stops at the line of scrimmage. When he hits people, they go backwards. He has a nose for the football to do those things, and yet he can run well enough to survive. But he needs a guy like Willie Gay who can run at a whole nother pace, right? So they could be a nice 1-2 punch. They would need each other. One's more physical and one's faster. Now, Willie Gay is not good enough, in my opinion, to be dominant unless he has some big boy shoulder pads next to him. And so that can get you excited about those two guys. I thought he did a nice job in his first game, did Nick Bolton. And there's a great upside for him. But the combination of he and Willie Gay will play well with each other. But Bolton's going to be not a dominant player by himself to blow the game up. He's going to be a complement player. But sometimes there are critical moments in the game where he will be so valuable. Red zone defense, okay? Ball's down at the 4-yard line. It's 2nd and goal. Do you have any chance of stopping him? You need a guy like Nick Bolton to power through and hit somebody, pick the right hole. And if you go back and look at the 2-point conversion play, Kevin, you get a chance to watch that. When Kareem Hunt jumped over, it was Bolton there who did not time his jump out at all and didn't get his shoulder pads up in the air to stop that play. And so that's just a learning curve deal. He'll do that. You know, 4 or 5 games from now, he would have stopped that 2-point conversion by meeting him right there. Instead, he mistimed his jump, got kind of tricked a little bit and go, oh, okay, that's an NFL play right there that guy made. But I was very encouraged by what he did, and I think he's going to be a really good player.
All right, now a couple of negatives, and one of them's on the offensive side. I think Clyde, I watched a lot, just like you did, I watched a ton of NFL this week. I don't know that I saw a team with a more pedestrian running back than Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and I know we all want to get excited and say we think he's going to be great. He's sort of pedestrian. He's kind of just a guy, isn't he?
I think so. I would agree with you. We can't write him off yet, but usually a running back, Kevin, bursts into the NFL and then kind of levels off. And Saquon Barkley, you know, sometimes it's because of injury, but a lot of times their first year is their best year. Just because they're reacting and they're excited, and then people start figuring out. These players, Kevin, they don't spend a lot of time on the field anymore, but you know where they spend a lot of their time? Watching tape. They know what your move is. They know when you're going to twist, when you're going to stiff arm. And they study this kind of stuff, and I think they figure out your game a little bit. Just like a hitter who starts hitting as a rookie, and then what do the pitchers do? They start figuring out where your holes are, right? You don't like that curveball. You don't like the ball high and inside. And they play that, and I think they're starting to do that with most running backs in the NFL. It happens, and they're starting to do that with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And he's not big enough to power over people.
Right.
He's not Tyreek Hill fast enough to make them pay. So, you know, when the Chiefs snap the ball, if you're on the other team, just for a moment, aren't you scared? Aren't you just scared of what's going to happen? But when the ball is handed off to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the fear just goes down.
Right.
I mean, from a Chiefs perspective, your excitement level.
The defense,
when you see the ball
just
handed to him,
they're daring
your
the
excitement
Chiefs to
level
run.
Goes down.
They're daring the Chiefs
yeah, they're
to
daring
run.
Him.
Everybody
yeah.
dares the Chiefs to run. And I thought Andy even admitted this without saying it. And this is what I think this is the most troubling aspect of the game for me. Is we spent the offseason rebuilding the offensive line. We're gonna have a big, beefy offensive line, is gonna push the other team off the ball. We'll be able to run it. And then what do we see at the goal line? We see Mike Remmers getting a run. We see Blake Bell in there. We see Travis Kelce lining up at quarterback. Three different plays were just as goofy as could be near the goal line because Andy was completely admitting we can't power this ball into the end zone here. And I was disappointed in seeing those formations.
Yeah, I don't, you know, you go back to the San Francisco Super Bowl game and Williams running the ball back there, Kevin. He's underrated, but I think he was better. I think he's better than Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So I don't want to give up on him yet, but the meter level, the excitement meter, I don't know if you can feel that play by play, Kevin, if you're, you know, just that engaged. Maybe it's only me that's crazy like that, but when the ball snapped, I mean, my excitement level as the play unfolds, it's like everything's in slow motion. You know, it's like, oh, Patrick's got the ball, oh, he fakes, here he looks up, and you just think, I bet Tyreek Hill's going to make a big play. I bet Travis Kelce's going to catch something. I bet it's going to be a 15-yard gain. And then you see him hand it off to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and you go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then 3 yards later, he's smashed with, you know, five guys, you know, piling on him. So I don't want to beat up on the guy too much. He's going to be fine, but he's not near the kind of threat that the Chiefs have at other places in the lineup.
All right. The final thing to nitpick on here is one that, you know, sometimes I just have to reverse the thing and say, okay, what if the uniforms were changed and you saw something and say, okay, this isn't the Chiefs, this is the Browns, or it happened completely the opposite. So I'm watching with some people yesterday, and one of them is just like the biggest Chiefs fan ever. And he's a complete and utter homer on everything ever that ever happened, period. So we know this going in. And I make the comment when Ronnie Harrison Jr. is kicked out of the game for pushing Chiefs coach Greg Lewis on the sideline, I said, look, the first call they made was Chiefs sideline taunting. That was the first thing they called. Then they switch it to Harrison ejection, basically, for the personal foul, the unsportsmanlike, whatever. And it completely disregarded what Greg Lewis did as a Chiefs coach, which is something you don't do. You don't cross the line onto the field of play and shove a player on another team. How in the world was Greg Lewis not kicked out of that game yesterday? I don't understand. And if this was just the opposite, if it was Tyrann Mathieu over on the Browns bench and Mathieu done something unseemly, you know, had his foot on a guy or whatever. By the way, that thing was pretty harmless. Did he have his foot on the Chiefs player? Yes, he did, but it was harmless. There was not going to be a fight. It was after the play. I'm standing over you, whatever. They could have called taunting on Harrison at that point, and that would have been fine. But until Greg Lewis came up and put his hands on Harrison, that thing was never going to escalate. How in the world did the coach stay in the game?
Yeah, I don't know. I agree with you because there are rules of engagement down the field. When you see these mic'd up segments, you hear that there's a lot more chatter down on the field than you could ever imagine. The game just seems so cleansed. And even I, when I'm watching it, don't really think about all the little conversations that are going down on the field unless they're strategic. You know, I love when the centers yelling out something on a blocking scheme or the quarterback's going, 55's Mike. You know, the strategy I love, but the trash talking and the intimidation and all those kind of things, when you hear the mic'd up segments, you realize that they are happening out there. And this is an example where there are rules of engagement. If you got a helmet on, you can shove and push guys around, right? You can hope, just as long as the officials don't call a flag, you can give a little shove at the end. You can talk trash to each other. There's also rules of engagement with the coaches. The coaches can talk a little trash to you, but it usually better be like the head coach if you're talking to the players, you know, a Bill Belichick saying, hey, get back to your own sideline, you jerk, or something like that. I mean, yeah, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. You haven't crossed the line. You don't say, you know, it's not Little League Baseball where, hey, don't talk to my players. It's not like that, Kevin. You're on the sideline, you can talk a little trash. If you're an assistant coach, you know, you can yell something, but it cannot be directed at any individual. It should be like, hey, guys, get up, let's go, you know, or something like that. But to go out and you don't have a helmet on, even if it's on the sideline there, and you push a Cleveland Brown player like happened right there, that is completely unacceptable.
I agree.
That is nowhere is that.
I was very unpopular at the watch party for saying it. I'm like, no, you can't do that. The coach can't do it.
He's trying to get guys off the pile, and he goes, get back off the pile. That's not your job, man. Officials are out there.
That's right.
And players with helmets.
You say, hey, get back, get off of him.
You can yell a couple of things and then kind of wait for the head coach to trump you out. Like if he starts yelling and then you're an assistant and then here comes Andy walking up, then you step back, right? You're not even supposed to be on that white painted area, that 3 feet. The assistants aren't even supposed to be in there. You know, they're supposed to be back
right.
a little bit. It's the head coach's area to walk.
Right.
So
that's
you can start yelling, but you get back and let Andy Reid do some talking.
Exactly. Right?
That's the rules of engagement. When he shoved, that crossed the line to where you almost might give immunity to the Cleveland Browns.
Almost.
But that was too hard a punch.
Yep.
He should have been kicked out of the game as a player. That, you know, you're hitting someone who doesn't have a helmet on.
Yep.
And now you got to have the rules and engagement in mind that no matter how mad you are or how wrong they are, you could really hurt somebody who's not there to play the game.
Yeah.
So the Cleveland Browns should have lost their player. I have no problem with that. But it was as much, if you had to pick a penalty on one team, you might start with the Chiefs
yeah.
and say they had the penalty. And I don't know how you'd kick out coaches. I don't know what the rules are on that. I've never really been exposed to that. But he should have gone too if that's what the rules
are. I agree.
State. I just don't. I bet he gets fined.
Quietly.
You know, the NFL's got some interesting things going on. They get to call you, Kevin, on Monday.
he's going to get fined, and they'll probably be quiet. It won't be public, but it's going to happen, and Andy's going to pay it for him, and that's going to be that. And so whatever. This is team-building stuff. You know, Andy goes in the postgame and says, no, you can't do that to our players. You know, they're all standing up for their own guys, which is what you do in football, and he's standing up for his coach. So the right thing's happening along those lines, but it was not a good situation. You just shouldn't be involved in those things. I got one other thing before so I want to talk about the Bills losing and Aaron Rodgers getting benched. The other thing I want to ask you about the NFL, the Thursday night game that you referenced, the Cowboys-Tampa Bay game. I don't know if you remember exactly this play. I think it might even been in the first half. I don't know. But Dak Prescott threw an incomplete pass on maybe a third down in the scoring zone. They were at like the 15, 20-yard line going in, and it was incomplete. And the Tampa player almost intercepted a linebacker, and he was so frustrated that he didn't catch it, he ripped his helmet off and slammed his helmet down on the ground and then picked it back up, and he's walking off, put it back on. And I immediately thought, that's a first down for the Cowboys. You can't take your helmet off in this league. Do you remember that play? Did I actually see that happen? And did they just decide, well, we're not going to enforce it because it would create a first down? What was that?
Well, Kevin, there were... When you want to get on the officials, okay, you want to get on the officials bandwagon, a lot of people wanted to talk about the last catch downfield, the back shoulder throw by Tampa Bay and the push off and say, why wasn't there offensive pass interference called? Okay.
Correct.
So I bring that up only because I don't want to gripe about things. And I didn't even think of it when the play was unfolding. I'm like, just make a play. Don't fall down. And I don't like this ticky tacky little offensive pass interference being called. Anyway, so, you know, I didn't really get mad about that, didn't go to bed. It could have been offensive pass interference, and the way they call it nowadays, it probably was. But that doesn't mean that Tom Brady wouldn't have found a way to win anyway. They're winners, and the Cowboys aren't. So I really didn't have a big I didn't have a big problem with that, Kevin. You know what I had a big problem with? The play you talked about.
Yeah.
That was a critical moment in the game.
Huge point.
And when he spiked his helmet on the ground, right in the middle of the field, that is a penalty. That's a 15-yard penalty. You can't take your helmet off and celebrate. And then he didn't quickly put it on like, oh, crap, sorry, and put it back on, Kevin. He walked 5 or 10 yards like it was pregame or something before he kind of meandered. And finally, as he got close to the sideline, put his helmet back on.
And
I thought that should have been a penalty. And I was saying, as soon as that helmet,
before
it hit the ground, Kevin, I go, that's a penalty.
I couldn't believe
that's, it. And I'm sitting by myself, so who am I talking
right.
to? I don't speak out very often, okay?
I
don't
couldn't
yell
believe
at the TV.
And God bless
I go, that's
Mike,
a penalty!
God bless Mike McCarthy for making the money he makes coaching football, but this is on him. That's the one where you find the white hat and you don't stop. And you call a timeout. You do anything you want. You send it back to New York. You get that call. You get that call. You say, this is too obvious. That is a rule. I'm literally on Google looking up to see if they changed the rule, Stan. I'm like, well, this is the first game of the year. Maybe they changed the rule and I didn't know it.
Maybe they have.
No,
maybe they
haven't.
Have
changed
I'll stand corrected.
That was the only helmet off all weekend. No, they have not changed the rule.
But it's still just the reaction. You cannot have that. You cannot have that kind of reaction or taunting or whatever. You can't start throwing things. He threw his helmet to the ground.
I know.
It was a critical point in the game because instead of punting, you get an automatic first down.
I think they missed a field goal, didn't they?
The Cowboys are good on offense.
I think they missed a field goal right there, didn't they? Right after that play? They were in field
goal. That might have been. That little sequence right there.
Yeah. It was field goal territory. They were down around the 20-yard line.
Yeah, because when he threw his helmet down, he was like the 10 or 15.
Yeah.
Kevin, you and I did not talk about this before we get on.
No, we didn't.
People may not know this. We don't script this stuff. I have no idea what's coming. We just start talking. But
we see the same things in games. We see the same things.
That was exactly that. When you went to the end of the game and said, were you mad at the officials? I would say that call right there at that point made a big difference. And I thought it was completely missed and a very easy call. So surprised that no one reacted to it. So I'm on it with you on that one.
Okay, overreaction to say the Steelers are a contender in the AFC because nobody really thought they would be. Ben Roethlisberger doesn't look like Ben Roethlisberger used to look, but we've got a Hall of Fame coach here in Mike Tomlin. Now, I know there's no question he's a Hall of Fame head coach, and a team that's known for their defense and known for being gritty and you know doing all these things. They got the sack streak going and all these different – and they just go to Buffalo, and the Bills looked absolutely useless all day long. What do you make of the Steelers' win over the Bills?
Giant for everybody's viewing to make sure that they understand what's going on in the NFL. Teams will not be the same after 17 games, Kevin, and more playoff teams. You know, we got an extra playoff team and only one bye and all that. So I'm not saying this is final conclusion, but I'm going to say it's same conclusion I had at the end of last year, and I dabbled into it with a comment that I made to you earlier on this podcast. The Buffalo Bills are a flawed football team. They have no running game. The only running game they have is Josh Allen scrambling or faking a pass and quarterback running. I don't know how long it's going to be before this guy gets beat up and starts looking like Roethlisberger, but he can't do it by himself. So he and Diggs are really the two threats. The defense is undersized. You can always run the ball on them and make moves. I think Buffalo is a good team. Buffalo might win the division. But this is not Super Bowl-level stuff coming together here, Kevin. It is not. Now, you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers, and anytime Mike Tomlin's coaching the ball club, I believe him. You look at Harbaugh with the Ravens. They've got tons of injuries already. Lamar Jackson is limited, but they are championship-level organization down to their head coach. These are teams that, until proven otherwise, I always believe in. Every year, Kevin, until they get into real playoff problems or so many injuries or just isn't their year, always mark down Pittsburgh and the Baltimore Ravens for me as being legit, the real deal. Now, I don't know if Cleveland can do it game after game, but I told you, they are a much harder team for the Chiefs to beat in the playoffs than Buffalo. Basically, I don't believe in Buffalo that much. I thought when the AFC Championship game came up, it was a 90% chance the Chiefs are going to win. When the division round was played against Cleveland, I thought it was like a 65% chance the Chiefs are going to win. Does that make sense? I think Buffalo's flawed. I think everyone acting like they're great is a mistake. And the Miami Dolphins are not too much different than the Buffalo Bills, and I'm not writing off Belichick until they're completely out of it. Now, they blew it yesterday, and they lost the game to the Dolphins. They should have won. They had the ball in field goal range when a player fumbled the football, or they would be 1-0. So remember when I said Pittsburgh and Baltimore, put New England in there until proven otherwise. Those three teams may not be Super Bowl championship level right now, but they should be playoff level, and they're very dangerous to be playing in the playoffs. Cleveland, don't know about the coach. Don't know if Mayfield's going to be able to pull it off. But that may be the hardest team for the Chiefs to beat in the AFC. Or how about the theme of the last few years? You know what the theme of the last few years, Kevin, has been for the Chiefs? Hard, hard opening schedule.
Yeah.
And then it eases off and they run off a big winning streak. What's incredible, and you know all the stats, and so do the Chiefs fans, during that hard, hard early schedule, all the Chiefs have done is roll through and win every September game and never thrown an interception. So I'm not trying to make up, oh, watch out, Chiefs, you better be concerned. But, Kevin, the Ravens on the road is a legitimate opponent next week, okay? And then they play the Chargers. And I don't know where to mark the Chargers down, but they play some high-level football. Yep. Herbert's playing well. The ability to convert on the third down plays. They had adversity against a really good Washington defense. So Cleveland, Chargers, Those are the up-and-coming teams that worry me, Kevin.
Yeah.
And then the old stalwarts, the great coaches, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, New England. Don't hold it to me. Buffalo might be fine, but I still do not believe in Buffalo as a Super Bowl champion at all. Did not last year and was the least surprised guy in the world. When everyone's making fun of Roethlisberger and he can't do this and he can't do that, I watched that game the whole way through saying Pittsburgh's going to win this thing.
The Saints drilled the Packers. Aaron Rodgers got benched. Nothing more shocking in week one of the NFL than the MVP getting thrown to the bench because it's going so poorly for the Packers offense. We don't have to spend an eternity on this. It is only 1 week. It is Aaron Rodgers. The Packers have pedigree too. Was it a bad day or are they in for a bad season?
That is a great question, and it is up for grabs now. It was not up for grabs. This whole Aaron Rodgers off-season stuff, to me, I thought had no effect on the team. I thought he'd be fine. He's aloof all the time. He doesn't think of himself as one of the guys. And they know in the locker room he's not one of the guys. Okay, and in the NFL, that's fine. You don't have to hang out. Hey, when Peyton Manning was in the locker room, I know some guys who played with him. Peyton Manning didn't hang out with the guys, Kevin. When they came to work, he was the boss, and he was a superstar. And when they left the locker room, he might say hi in the locker room a little bit, but his life was completely different. Not like Patrick Mahomes, who truly integrates himself in and is one of the guys. Okay, but that's not Aaron Rodgers' game. Aaron Rodgers is thinking Aaron Rodgers. He's Cali. He's national. And when he goes to Green Bay, he's like, yeah, you guys are all small time, but I'll take you to the promised land. Let's go win. So I didn't really worry about him not being around. But what happened and the fact that they got drilled yesterday, and it wasn't in New Orleans, Kevin. It was in Jacksonville.
Right.
Because of the hurricane, they moved that game to Jacksonville. So my first answer to you would be don't overreact on week one. There's really not a reason why with the division that the Packers are in that they can't roll. I mean, are you really going to worry about the Lions playing them a couple times? The Bears a couple of times? The Vikings? Kevin, they should go 5-1 or 6-0 in those games. And Aaron Rodgers will probably come back to beat himself. But the level that he has hacked off, and when the coach said it was embarrassing, how about Aaron Rodgers going to the mic and saying, well, I heard the coach said it's embarrassing, but I would not say those are the right words. Just game one. So he's already trying to make it a public battle between the Packers. He's calling them out all the time. So it could turn into a disaster. Yeah, it really could. But Saints fans, no Drew Brees. Thumbs up on that, right? I mean, Alvin Kamara looked great. And I think Jameis Winston learned a lot. He learned on two fronts. He learned being a backup last year, how great the Saints offense is and how Drew Brees does stuff. And he also learned from Tom Brady that he was on a Super Bowl roster before. Tampa Bay was really good the year before, but he threw too many interceptions, right? So I think Jameis Winston is an improved player. Saints got to be pretty happy about where they are. Packers, I still would call them the division champs, Kevin. We don't want to overreact on week one, but if this continues, it could become explosive.
All right, you called a game on Saturday that in college that is a – real ramifications, and for the second season in a row, K-State fans have looked at their team get off to a good start with Skylar Thompson at quarterback, only to leave the field. And the reports right now are that he may return and play some football this year, which means he didn't completely blow out his knee, but he does have a knee injury, and it's going to be a while. Is there anything you know or can add to that? And it doesn't even look like K-State is going to have a chance to survive with Will Howard at quarterback. It just didn't go well. Maybe the team was in shock from him leaving. Maybe there's more to Will Howard's game, but boy, it did not look very good with Skylar Thompson out of there. How rocked is K-State's season right now?
Well, the game was definitely rocked. The emotion from the team, from head coach Chris Klieman, about losing Skylar Thompson was an effect on that game, and I'm just not going to disrespect SIU. They're really good. They really are good, Kevin. They could line up, and if they had a four-game schedule, they could compete with the Big 12 teams. Now, maybe not a 7 or 8 or 9 game schedule, they might get worn down, but it's a legitimate win. But the team really hums when Skylar Thompson's in there. I mean, Kevin, you got a guy who started his 32nd game, tying for the most in K-State history. He really loves Chris Klieman and that coach, the head coach quarterback relationship doesn't happen very much in college. That's a pro relationship, right? So when you have that, everyone feels a lot more comfortable. Courtney Messingham is like a calculus level coach, kind of a scientist. Not with the dramatic weapons that Andy Reid has. He's not trying to do it that way, but it relies on so many subtleties. from four guys running in into the huddle, new guys every play, and still keeping your team together, huddling up, get to the line of scrimmage, read the defense, audibleize, be able to fundamentally handle all the, you know, wide receivers always flashing in your face with the shotgun snap and all the things K-State does, and then delivering an accurate pass very quickly to the guy that's open. That's what K-State football is all about at its best on offense, and Skyler is orchestrating it perfectly. The early pass against Stanford, you think about the first pass he threw on an out route against man-to-man. He delivered a ball perfectly, and it was such an in-stride catch that K-State turned it into not only an 8-yard gain, but about a 20-yard gain. Those kind of things occur with Skyler orchestrating it, and he does a great job. He runs well enough as well, and he protects the football, right? He doesn't turn the ball over, doesn't fumble, doesn't get sacked and fumble, and he helps the offensive line and everybody. So, obviously, if we're going to brag up Skyler Thompson, and I think it's even a better compliment, not only is he in his sixth year and started forever and all that, he fits Courtney Messingham's strategy so well that we can't talk about that being a positive. And I think it is. I think K-State's offense is going to be good, Kevin. They're going to be reliable and consistent. Deuce Vaughn's always a weapon. They made Malik Knowles a weapon. They've had three plays over 50 yards already in the time that Skyler Thompson's been in the game, one game in one quarter. So they've had some explosives, but you can't brag up Skyler Thompson and then say if he's gone, that there's not a giant step differently. And that's where they are. Now, how good is Will Howard's the question? Will Howard in this game alone looked like more of a freshman quarterback that played last year, right? A little limited, not very confident, a couple of bad throws. You know, he skied the ball over Tyrone Howe and ended up going right to a defender and ended up being a pick six for SIU. In the second half, he threw a pass that he got lucky that wasn't another pick six. And fortunately, it flew high enough and went into the bench. But he also threw a couple of great balls down the middle. Phillip Brooks had a big third down catch for K-State at a critical point late in the game for 21 yards. He threw the ball to Landry, my son, over the middle on third and long on what was ended up being a touchdown drive for a 21-yard gain. There were times where he looked like an improved player and really understood and threw the ball, understood what he was doing and threw the ball better, but it was not there all night long. We'll see if he steps it up. He said he's such a truthful young man, Kevin. I know him a little bit and I know his family some. He is so truthful, and he goes, I thought I was ready. I tried to be ready, but it's different when you're the starting quarterback. Kevin, that's the fact. Okay. You can say, I got the mentality. I'm going to act like I'm a starter. It's different than when you walk on campus and you're going to class and you know the ball's going to be in your hands. So let's wait and see this week. They play a legitimate Nevada team, a good Nevada team that beat Cal on the road, has an NFL-level starting quarterback. Right now, most people believe he's the second or third best quarterback in college football getting ready for the NFL next year. So it's going to be a heck of a challenge. Let's see this week how Will Howard plays. He obviously is going to have to pick it up and be an improved version. He can't be the young guy that's just learning anymore. It's time for him to step up. And then you hope Skyler Thompson does get back. What you said about the report when you asked about that, I think is very consistent with what I heard immediately right after the injury occurred. And then what you said seems to be the direction it's going, that it is an injury on his knee, and there's some hope that it's one that he can continue to play with at some point. And I don't know if that's this week or 4 weeks from now. But sometime in that window, if everything goes correctly, he should be able to get out there and give it a shot. Maybe he won't be 100%, but you know, 90% of Skyler Thompson, it's his accuracy of his throw and the mental side of it that adds so much to the K-State offense. That's why they need him out here. Physically, Will Howard is big and strong and can run. He looks to be able to throw the ball better, but obviously he's got some steps to go. We'll see. Next week's going to be a big game for K-State against Nevada, period. But if Will Howard's out there taking every snap, it's really going to be interesting to see what year number two looks like. I don't think what we saw in the first game really mattered, because you know the other thing he's very truthful about? How about a kid in this transfer portal era where anytime you get disrespected, you just leave? Okay. Southern Illinois had a quarterback battle in fall camp, Kevin. The guy who didn't get the job to start the first game left. Just left campus. Here is Skyler Thompson coming back in year six. Will Howard's like, okay, it's my time. I played last year, and now Skyler's going to be gone. Skyler comes back. Most guys would get upset about it. Just the opposite. Will Howard and him have become best friends. They hang out together. at the football facility all the time. They are so supportive of each other. It makes no sense. They're in competition with each other. That's how much Will Howard has learned to love and respect Skylar Thompson. So when Skylar got hurt, guess what Will was thinking? He basically had a tear rolling down his face. And you can't think that way.
It's hard.
You got to compartmentalize, right? You got to just go out and play. It's my time. He didn't do that. I think he was emotionally hit in the gut with Skylar being hurt. Now let's see what Will can do with the week of preparation and no worry about Skylar. He's like, I got to go out and win this game for Skylar. Yet to be determined, though. It's not going to be easy to replicate what Skylar Thompson's able to do in the K-State offense.
All right, and finally, Missouri loses to Kentucky 35-28 in what was a very important game in the East Division of the SEC. Chris Rodriguez had 206 yards rushing, 4 touchdowns total in the game. Kentucky ran for 340 yards against Missouri. While Connor Bazelak played well, he had 4 touchdowns, threw for almost 300 yards. You got to stop the run, and Kentucky just ran all over Missouri. Is that something you think Missouri can shore up in a conference that clearly is going to have some teams that will line up and try to run the football on Mizzou, or is this going to be a problem all year?
It looks like it should be a problem all year. We bragged up Nick Bolton, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Talking about his NFL capabilities, and everybody knows he came from Mizzou. And boy, he was a big difference maker. To lose him in the middle of their defense was going to force Mizzou to take a step backwards. At the start of the year, their defense was not going to be as good as last year. Then where was it going to go? But now, I don't like combining last year with this year. They're two different teams and everything else. It usually should not be a factor, Kevin. But when things are so consistent, you know, remember when the Chiefs under Bob Sutton got run game after game, and then you start the first game of the next year and it looks exactly like the last year's game, you kind of do bridge the two together, right? I mean, I think we did that a couple times with Bob Sutton's defense. Go back and look at the last three games that Missouri played last year. They got lit up on the scoreboard. They gave up a ton of points, basically about 40 every game or more. And what are we seeing in game one and two this year, Kevin? It looks like much the same. I know they got a new defensive coordinator, and coming from the NFL, maybe he's going to learn some things and put guys in different situations and make some adjustments to the college game. But boy, these two games remind me so much of the last few games of last year where Mizzou struggled on defense, but still did some nice things on offense with Bazelak and obviously Eli Drinkwitz is an offensive guru and focuses in on that offensive side. And Missouri has balance in their offense, Kevin. They did a nice job of coming back. If you want to pat them on the back, they got that game tied. They're always 14 points behind, then drive down, get within 7, and the defense can't stop them. So for most of the game, the offense just had to go uphill the whole time on the road against a well-established and well-coached team by Mark Stoops. They did not have the advantage in the game when the game unfolded the way it did, but the offense gave them a chance. But at the end of the day, what was the consistent? The defense never stopped Kentucky all game long.
Right.
And Central Michigan really didn't stop them very much. They had 9 sacks in that game, right? But down after down, the SEC teams aren't going to give up 9 sacks, right, Kevin? Their offensive linemen are not going to give up that sack. So really, we've seen nothing of the Missouri defense that gives us any hint that they're not going to be looking at, you know, start the game with 35 points on the board by the opponent and then do your plus or minus off of that, more likely plus. So it's going to be a little bit of a challenge. You and I spoke about it. I think the schedule still lays out well enough for Missouri to gain some momentum, maybe for the defense to learn. The good news is I don't think they're going to see a lot of losses piling up. The bad news is they win that Kentucky game, they have a chance to win 10 games this year in regular season. You win that Kentucky game, you establish yourself as a team that's going to go after Florida in second place in the SEC East. You establish yourself for the long term. This is something I talked about before the game. The pecking order for the long term, Kevin, matters, and you really, in the food chain, can't be getting passed up by Kentucky. If you're Missouri, you can't do that. And I don't know how far in the future, Kevin, we're looking. Is it 4 years, 2 years, or next year? Whenever Oklahoma and Texas goes into the SEC, you can get all excited and do backflips about the extra money that's going to earn you and the extra prestige. But you know what matters to me? What happens on the field.
That's right.
Football, okay? Mm-hmm. Men's basketball, yes. Football. Football number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You know, football. Kevin, they moved down 2 slots in the – the probabilities over the next 25 years of Missouri football winning a conference or or being up there as the third best team. They're two slots down. There's no way you don't put Oklahoma and Texas ahead of Missouri in a probability. If you're just a general person living in California or New York, just objective as can be, Missouri just lost two slots in the SEC, Kevin. This is not good news on the field. So you need to beat the Kentuckys. So I'm making too much of this game for 2021, too much of this game for the long term, but these are the teams you've got to beat. And Missouri was right there. It was a very even game. They didn't get it done. I think they'll bounce back. They're going to have a very good record, but they cannot stub their toe and be surprised. You know, if they lose at Boston College, you know, now there's going to be some question marks getting into the SEC. I do like their schedule. Boy, that Boston College game now on the road is a much bigger game because I think Missouri is the better team. But once you lose on the road and you put that kind of yuck in your mind, Kevin, and you're a college team, it makes it more challenging to go to the next one. So, yeah, I'm disappointed. I really wanted Mizzou to get over that game. And what do you have them? 6-0 getting ready to play Texas A&M? Was that right?
Yeah, if they won this one, I thought they had a chance.
And I don't buy it. And I don't buy Texas A&M as a dominant team, Kevin, because here's why. Not that they don't have the talent, but they lost their quarterback, Kelly Mond. He's in the NFL now. Okay, so they lost their quarterback. And number two, as you're working up the scale, like you're Iowa State, and you're working up, it takes a lot of energy to move from the middle up there, okay? And then once they start patting you on the back and say you made it, not with a national championship, but hey, look, you're the second or third best team in the SEC. Aren't you great? That is the worst combination. Hey, Iowa State, man, you're awesome. You're unbelievable. You're the second best in the conference. Not even the best. And your players start thinking they're good and cocky. It is hard to sustain when everyone tells you you're great, and A&M is in that stage right now. I'm the least surprised guy in the world that Colorado fought them all day long and almost beat A&M. So I'm not signing that game off. I think Missouri can beat A&M. If they play well that day, I think A&M will overlook them and say we're great, and they're not good enough to do that. So let's don't act like that's a loss. But I was excited about 6-0 or wherever you had them. I think it was 6-0 when they played A&M at home. There's a chance to be 7-0 at that time. So yeah, it's a big game. Let's not look at it any other way. It's not season over for the Tigers, but a missed opportunity to go to Kentucky and win.
Stan, you're the best. I appreciate your time, man. You're going to need to recharge your phone, I think, after doing this. we're both so dang excited about this football season. We could probably do this all day, but I better let you go make some money at your real job.
Are people going to listen to us?
You can just hit the
end button.
No.
And if they don't want to hear us, Kevin, and we'll just keep talking. I mean,
Stan,
this is just you and I.
There's so,
you and I chatting.
So many of us just love football. Of course they're going to listen. Yes. Yes. I love football.
Well, I was in Manhattan, Kevin, and it was so exciting to see the crowd back and to see the K-State fans tailgating out there. And there was a few different events I had to go to. And as I'm walking around, the one theme of the pregame, other than, man, K-State's back, they beat Stanford, let's go, let's party, and all that excitement was, hey, Stan! Hey, come here a second. So I walk over and, you know, 15 yards from this, hey, love you on Kevin Keatsman's KK Has Issues. Love that podcast. I'm going, oh my gosh, this is great. Because I don't know how many people even know how to sort through the podcast world. I don't know how to sort through it. I know how to get to yours. KK Has Issues. But man, like I said before, you're the best. You're doing a great job. And I did not expect that to be the theme walking around. At least five separate people of all ages, many of them younger. I guess they're the podcast experts. I shouldn't be surprised.
Right.
But, you know, a 30-year-old yelling at me, hey, Stan. And I'm like, hi, I haven't met you before. How you doing? Hey, love you on Keatsman. KK Has Issues. And I go, that's so cool.
That's
so
awesome.
So congratulations, thank man. You're able to get to the youngsters with those podcasts. But, hey, thanks, everyone, for listening to KK Has Issues all the time and supporting Kevin and the advertisers, the great advertisers. And especially thanks for listening to me because it's so much fun to talk football with you. And if you don't have a podcast, Kevin, just give me a call, and I'll run my phone out talking to you because I just love talking football with you.
That sounds like a plan. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, Kevin.
All right, take care. There is Stan Weber. He is the best in the business, and there is nobody that loves football more than Stan. He's presented each week here on KKHI by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC in Excelsior Springs. Mike Robinson and his team, well, customers say, we just make it easy. You can ask for Mike or Tim on the showroom floor or shop, click, and drive at robertsrobinson.com with GMC. We are professional grade. John Hutchins and his team at Amazing Garage Floors, they would love to seal your driveway here before winter hits adding years of life to your concrete surfaces. Or if you'd like to get that great, amazing garage floor, log on to amazinggaragefloors.net. Elite Automation, designing and installing intelligent building automation systems that will save you thousands on your utility costs. Call 913-766-2188 for an analysis for your business on how to save money on energy, or visit them at eliteautomate.com. And 360 Document Solutions. These are the folks that can help you around the office, make your company more productive and more profitable. It's copiers, printers, KIPP black and white and color wide format, IT solutions, mailing systems, phone systems. 360 Documents can make you more efficient at your office. Call Mark for a free consultation at 913-745-5344 or online at 360documentsolutions.com. Now, we'll get to the Monday Night Football game in the AFC West in a moment. There were some other college games nationally that I want to touch on briefly here on KKHI. I was thrilled to see Oregon beat Ohio State, and I tweeted on Saturday as Ohio State went down to Oregon, that should eliminate Ohio State from the playoff, but it won't. But I honestly believe that Ohio State should have to run the table. Like, if they go undefeated in the Big Ten, nobody's going to argue that they're in the playoff and they're the team. But they didn't look particularly good. Oregon led the game throughout and was almost a dominant football team from a conference that isn't very good, the Pac-12. And so I just enjoyed seeing that. I do. I want to see a shakeup in college football. I like to see Alabama lose a couple of times this year. I'd love to see Ohio State lose a couple of games. Clemson losing to Georgia was refreshing. I'll take all that I can get. So that was the first one. The second game Saturday that caught my eye was Iowa and Iowa State. And, you know, this was a big buildup for Iowa State. They have not had a lot of wins over Iowa. They're at home. College game day is there. They're ranked in the top 10. They've got a veteran coach and quarterback together. This is their chance to beat Iowa. And they don't do it. And they lose 27-17. And the amazing stat now is like 25 games. I don't know the exact. It's 20-some games in a row now that over the parts of three seasons that Iowa has held its opponent to 24 points or less. In college football, that's amazing. Iowa doesn't win a lot of style points on you. That's not what they do. They go out and defend you, and they frustrate you, and you don't score, and when the clock hits zero, Iowa has at least one more point than you. And this had to be one of the most frustrating days ever for Iowa State, because I think they feel like their offense is really explosive this week, and they're going to win a bunch of games and score a lot of points. So it was disappointing for Iowa State, but I know a lot of fans. I know a lot of people that are Iowa fans as well. Congratulations to them. That was great for the state of Iowa. It was good for the Big Ten and the Big 12, but certainly disappointing for Iowa State to not get that win. And then my favorite moment of the entire day, without a doubt, was just Woo Pig Suey lining up and drilling the University of Texas. I mean, this was a beatdown of the Texas Longhorns, and it was very easy to say. Instant reaction, Twitter shot, whatever you want to do, welcome to the SEC, to Texas, because they got a whole lot more of this coming to them. Stan just touched on it right there. I still can't believe that Oklahoma and Texas are leaving for the SEC. These two schools had a conference that they ran. They were in charge of the conference. They had the clearest path of any schools in America to the college football playoff, and they're waving goodbye to it for what? A few million more dollars a year that they don't need because they all have so many donors and so much money anyway? It's ridiculous. They're gonna take that money and fund a bunch of athletic programs that nobody watches, that don't, you know, bring any revenue in, and they're going to create some more scholarships. That's what you're doing this for? And this is not going to be good for Texas and Oklahoma long term. This is not going to be good for them. It is not. I tease my Oklahoma friends that, hey, you're about to find out what it's like to be K-State. K-State wins a conference championship about every 8 or 10 years, right? That's kind of what K-State's been. They win a conference title about every 8 or 10 years. That's what they do. Or they're in the running for one. I think that's what Oklahoma's going to be. I think if they won a SEC title once every 8 years, that'd be pretty good for Oklahoma. I don't think they know what's coming. Texas got a taste of it from Arkansas, which is not considered some great SEC team. And they just lit up the Longhorns. And I absolutely loved it. Also of note this weekend in the National Football League, the Broncos win at the Giants 27-13. Teddy Bridgewater was pretty good in this game. He was pretty good. Now, a lot of people are expecting the Giants to be better, but they certainly didn't show that in this game. So maybe the Giants just stink. Maybe they're not good, and that's that. But the Broncos went on the road. They got a win, 27-13 against the Giants. The Chargers went on the road and beat Washington 20-16. Washington's not great either, but they may have the best defense in the NFL. Certainly the best defensive line and linebacking corps. So it's very difficult to run the ball. It is very difficult to get time to throw. The Chiefs are going to face them later this year. And we'll see that really interesting matchup against that defense. But the Broncos and the Chargers both won on the road. The Raiders play at home tonight against the Ravens on Monday Night Football. The AFC West could go 4-0. There's a chance the AFC West goes 4-0 to start the year. And we talked about it in the offseason. Yes, the Chiefs have capitalized on this pitiful division the last few years. They have. These teams are all getting better. I don't think there's really a contender here that you're like, okay, this team is really going to push the Chiefs, but maybe. We'll just have to see. They're clearly legitimate opponents now. There is not a single division game that you just write down a W now. Chiefs have to go earn every single one of them. All three of these opponents can play a little now. And I think we'll see that with the Raiders tonight. The Raiders beat the Chiefs last year, so we know they're certainly capable, but the Raiders and Ravens on Monday Night Football. And a final note for KKHI on this Monday, Powerball. I'd kind of forgotten this. I don't really play Powerball a lot. Wednesday and Sunday has always been Powerball days, and my father-in-law loves to play Powerball. And whenever we're visiting them on a Saturday or something, we'll say, hey, let's go up and we'll get some Powerball numbers. And we get them, and I always lose, so I'm not a regular Powerball player or anything like that. I've never won anything. All right, I'm always just giving away $5 or $10. The Powerball jackpot tonight, there is a Monday drawing, and there's always a Monday drawing now. It's Monday, Wednesday, Saturday. So there's three Powerballs a week. It's $441 million. Now, whenever they give that number, that's always low. So it'll probably wind up being $460 by the time it's all said and done on Monday night. That is almost Patrick Mahomes' money. Go get a Powerball ticket. Here's the deal. If a KKHI listener wins Powerball, I'll let you be my partner. I'll let you partner in the business. You want to come buy in? We'll hire some employees. We'll grow this thing out. We'll get a big website. We'll build it into our own sports page, media company. You go win Powerball, and we'll partner up, and we'll really grow this thing. How's that sound? I wouldn't need much of your $441 million to do that. We can get this done. So everybody go buy a Powerball ticket, and let's see if we can get it to pay off. It'll be fun. I'm definitely going to buy a Powerball ticket, $441 million. Although I've never understood the psychology of, you know, when the number's really big like this, more people play, so your chance of winning are actually less, right? And if the Powerball jackpot is $40 million, isn't that enough too? I mean, $441 million is clearly better than $40 million. But isn't $40 million enough too? Even if like you had to share it with somebody else and you won $20 million, how much do you need? It's $441 million and I'm playing Powerball. That's for sure. Hey, if you get a chance this week, wherever you're out and about, you run into people, you're doing a great job. I really appreciate it. You heard Stan talking about it right there. It's all word of mouth at this point about this podcast. We appreciate it. Just remind people when you see them that Kevin Keatsman has issues.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC. To get exclusive patrons-only podcasts, receive a weekly newsletter, and attend in-person patrons-only parties, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron today. This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.